Well, hello, everyone. I want to return to the topic of Trump's tariffs and to a book that I have talked about previously on these Monday shows, which is Super Imperialism by Michael Hudson. I talked about this, I touched on it in a video about a month ago called Why Trump's Tariffs Represent the US Empire in Decline. And I happened to see an appearance of Professor Hudson talking to Alexander Mercurius from the Duran show I've been on before, and another dude. I'm going to play a clip from that towards the end, and I'm going to comment on it because I don't know if Mercurius watched my video or not, but he is echoing some very similar thoughts that I had in that video. I had previously, and I would recommend checking out these two previous videos if you haven't seen them, going back into the archive, just type this into YouTube and you'll find it. How US debt is a sign of its strength was my rundown, basically, of this book, Super Imperialism by Michael Hudson, The Economic Strategy of the American Empire. Fascinating book that turns a lot of classic imperial models on their heads, and it really makes you understand the control mechanism that the American Empire actually uses. It's ingenious, really. Now, why I'm interested in this is because ever since Trump came back in and has been, you know, going on about these tariffs and just analyzing the way he's been acting, it has struck me more than once that it seems to me that Trump does not understand what Hudson is talking about in this book, i.e. he has a very different view of the situation. His view is very transactional. All he sees is if the money is going out, that, you know, if it's a cost to America, that's bad. If the money is coming in, that's good. He just sees it as a kind of bottom line, almost like a corporate CEO, you know, a business tycoon looking at the bottom line, seeing America almost as a company. Thing is that when we're talking about empire, when we're talking about power, when we're talking about international relations, it's not really like that, as we'll explore in this video. And it's made me think more than once, does Trump actually know what he's doing? And I was fascinated to see that the author of this book, Hudson himself, is saying the very, very similar things. I'll play that at the end here. First of all, just a recap of some of the stuff that Hudson talks about in that book. The classic imperial model, as under the British Empire, has the hegemon, basically forcing its colonies under the doctrine of David Ricardo's comparative advantage, you know, specialization under the division of labor, yada, yada, yada. It's where you get Ghana, you know, you control Ghana, the Ivory Coast, let's say, or the Gold Coast. You control the Gold Coast and you force the Gold Coast into chocolate production. You manufacture cocoa and the raw cocoa is farmed in the Gold Coast. And then that cocoa is sent through via a monopoly contract over to a company in Britain, which is then turned into chocolate bars in a factory in Britain. And then those chocolate bars are sold all around the world and all around the rest of the empire. Okay. That was the basic imperial model under the British Empire. They talked about, famous disaster cases were when Ireland, for example, you know, the famous famine had over-specialized in potato production. That's a kind of example of where this went wrong. But most of the time, it didn't go as disastrously wrong as that. But you can see it's basically an extractive process. The raw materials are cheaper than the manufactured goods. And the profit is being made by turning those raw materials into manufacturers and then selling those all around the world. Then a second part of the British Empire, as I talked about a couple of weeks back when I was looking at John Gallagher and Robinson, you remember all that stuff I was looking at, is the informal empire, where you have various rival powers who are come under the British web, the British influence, via being part of their trade network. They have no option but to trade with the British Empire. And once you're trading with the British Empire, it's almost being like caught in a spider's web. Okay. Now, this mechanism, this second mechanism, is quite important when we come to the American Empire. But the first part, with this raw materials to manufacturers business that took place in the 19th century, is not part of what Hudson calls super imperialism. So the Hudson model looks something like this. You have the USA, that's the hegemon. All of these countries come under the spider's web of free trade. You can see the big box I've put all around this, free trade. Okay, there's the network. That's basically the control grid of the USA, is its free trade zone. Okay, anybody who comes into that thing, it's almost like being caught in a spider's web. Okay, and then you've got the various vassals, that's Europe, so-called Kanzuk, that's Canada, Australia, New Zealand, UK, and various Asian powers like Japan and South Korea as well, are American, Taiwan, you'd put in there as well. These are all vassals of the USA. But the relationship is very different. One of the things that America does that puts it apart from other colonial powers is it basically forces other countries to buy its debt through US Treasury bonds. And this is something that blew my mind when I first read Michael Hudson. And you can go back and watch that video. Basically, the debt that is, you know, conservatives in America are always talking about how big the US debt is. But what they don't realize is that that debt is basically an expression of American power. Okay, now this seems a little bit topsy-turvy. It seems a bit arse backwards to, you know, to common sense or whatever. But actually, when you really start to think about it, you're basically forcing other countries to pay for your stuff. Okay, imagine you have a credit card. And you're just buying stuff on credit, and you'll pay it back on the never never. Okay, as long as America has the largest army in the world, as long as it has military leverage, as long as it is the hegemon, it can get away with endless money printing. It can get away with, modern monetary theory, as they call it. It can get away with all sorts of things, because, well, you and whose army? And the American military basically keeps all of this system in place, right? So when Europeans, Canadians, Japanese, and so on are buying American debt, they are in effect paying for all of the stuff that the US spends its money on, right? I mean, this is a bizarre mechanism, but your typical Jamal living in Atlanta, Georgia, for example, maybe he has some welfare checks. If you actually trace the money flow, those welfare checks are probably being paid by some Czech peasant or something, or by you, Johnny and Tommy, down the street here in England, you know? So the US empire does actually benefit from its vassals, because the debt is an expression of its power. And that is basically forcing all those other countries to pay for America, like American largesse, essentially. Okay. Now, recently, the US aid thing has come under the auspices of DOGE and has exposed a vast patronage network. And the focus has been on woke. The focus has been on the spreading of American kind of this pernicious, toxic mind virus, as it's known. But it is also an expression of American soft power. Every single empire must spend. It must spend to build out its patronage network, okay? There are two forms of spending. There's the military spending, that is the actual physical American military presence in a place. And then there's the soft power spending, okay? And I've got tons of books here that actually look into exactly how this happened after World War II. There's a book I've mentioned before called Exporting the American Model by Jelic that looks at exactly how martial aid monies were administered after World War II. And one of the things is that the USA, it says, well, look, you're going to get all this money as a loan from America. You're going to have to pay it back. But you don't, like, they didn't just send money. They were like, okay, here are a bunch of American experts and managers that are going to come over and manage the process. Right? You can't just spend the money as you wish. You have to do it in an American style, in an American corporate style, okay, to mirror American forms, to bring it under the remit of the hegemon, okay? And all of this spending that America does, the US aid, as it's known, is actually a necessary part of empire soft control, okay? You get hard control in the military and you get soft control. And Trump, on both fronts, he's pulling away the aid money, so that is the soft power, but he's also increasingly talking about pulling away the hard power, okay? So this is actually doing in the super imperialism. It's actually demolishing, dismantling the American empire, which is actually a good thing. I support this. What is interesting to me, though, is whether his plan as to making America great again, bringing back manufacturers to America, you know, restoring the Rust Belt to its former glory, making cars in Detroit again, and all of this sort of stuff. Is his tariff plan actually going to do any of the things that he promises, or does Trump not understand the differences between these two different models? It feels like he is trying to shift back into an older imperial modelist. Like, he's now treating, like, make America great again almost as a kind of more petty empire in the 19th century mold. But the problem is that the structure of production, the supply chains and so on back in the 19th century are very different to the sorts of structures that have grown up under this system. And that is exactly what Michael Hudson talked about in this clip I'm about to play. Now, given that we're talking about economics, I'll remind you that I do sell a course on economics here where I actually talk about the structure of production. I talk about supply chains and all sorts of other things, marginal utility. And that is Foundations of Economics. For a long time, over COVID and so on, I didn't talk about economics so much because I felt like the world had gone crazy, right? I couldn't. Now economics is coming back into focus. So I'm talking about it a little bit more. Let me just play the ad, and when I come back, we're going to be looking at the clip from Mercurius and Professor Hudson.
Are you sick of hearing about Marx and Keynes? Do you want to know why neoclassical economics is so flawed? Have you ever wondered how to work out the marginal productivity of a burger bun? Do you want to level up your econ knowledge? Buy it now. £350. Foundations of Economics. Foundations of Economics.
I'm here.
Foundations of Economics. Get it now.
All right, so let me play this clip from Hudson, and I'm going to try not to interrupt them too much, but I am going to have to interrupt them a couple of times, so, you know, prior warning.
Good. That tariff is going to have to be, is not going to be spent the exporters, because the auto companies are going to have the parts from Canada and Mexico to make their automobiles, because they don't produce them here. They can't afford quickly to make a new factory to produce these parts. They're stuck with the existing system, and so the tariffs are going to increase the cost of making an automobile. This is exactly what happened in Trump's last administration when he tried to get the votes of the Steelworkers Union by levying tariffs on steel. And the problem of levying tariffs on steel was steel prices went up. It created a price umbrella, just like in the 19th century. But steel is something that manufacturers have to use. Almost all industrial goods use steel. So by raising steel prices, you increase the price of manufacturers and almost everything else right across the board. Mm. When there was the American tariff policy in the 19th century, it said, we don't want to tax raw materials. We want to get raw materials like England does, as cheaply as possible. We want to have tariffs on the finished goods, the value added, the industrial products. Somehow, Trump doesn't really.
Just sorry to interrupt, but just to come back on what he's saying there, in the 19th century, what America did is they put very high tariffs on their own manufacturers, okay? And then they made the raw materials cheap to bring in. They didn't put any restrictions on them because they wanted to mirror what the British Empire was able to do through force using tariffs, okay? Similar policies were actually conducted by South Korea and by Japan after World War II, the so-called the tiger economies. There's been, it's kind of Listian economics in a way, where you use tariffs in order to get yourself a foothold into an industry, okay? But the key thing is that you want to export manufacturers, okay? Finished goods, not the raw, like, so you don't tariff the underlying raw materials or what they call the intermediary goods, you know, the screws, the bits, like all the bits in between. You want to focus on the finished goods. So that is, for example, in the 1980s, where they stuck tariffs on cars to talk about Japan, right? There was a bit of a trade war between America and Japan in the 80s over cars, that you focus on the actual finished goods. And what Hudson is saying is that Trump has got a habit of focusing on the raw materials, on the energy, on the oil, on steel, on things that you actually need to make the manufacturers. So it doesn't actually work in the same way that 19th century tariffs work. Okay, I'll let Hudson continue.
The difference between putting a tariff on an industrial good and putting it on a raw material that goes into making industrial goods. So he's threatened just to increase the American price structure right across the board. And if other countries don't go along with this, if they protest, if they retaliate, then he's going to just...
Just to reiterate what he's saying, if you increase the price of raw materials, you're just going to increase the price of the finished goods. You're going to increase the structure of production, the actual costs. And what Hudson is saying is that the only thing this is going to do is make the finished good more expensive. Okay, this is actually not how conventional 19th century tariff policy that made America great, that Bannon talks about, that is not actually how it worked. So what Trump is doing in Hudson's analysis is just harmful. That's why I've called this video The Ugly Truth About Trump's Tariff Plan, because this is one of those areas where I just don't see what he thinks he's going to get out of it, right? Because it's not going to, by making the finished good more expensive, that's not going to rebuild that car plant in Detroit. That's not going to make America great again. It's just going to make everything more expensive. Anyway, let's continue.
Interrupt the trade, raise the tariffs more, interrupt the trade, and that's going to create a breakdown in the supply line. So what he's threatening to do is destabilize American industry. Well, it'll destabilize Canada's balance of payments. It'll destabilize Mexico's balance of payments. Mm-hmm. It'll prevent them from paying their debts. The American dollar will go up against these currencies temporarily, or at least they'll go down. But this is not going to help America reindustrialize at all.
It's most interesting because I think what you're basically saying is that he doesn't really understand the actual American system that he's talking about. He's just cherry picking bits of it that he, are simple and easy for him.
And I'm afraid that's my impression as well, friends, as someone who's read quite a lot about these things. I feel like Trump is just treating it almost like a CEO would treat a business, like trying to treat America like one giant corporation. Trouble is, the real world isn't like that. That's just an analogy, right? You can't run a country like you run a business.
To understand, he's got this idea that tariffs by themselves were what made America great. So he's going to impose these tariffs without really looking through all of the consequences or understanding them very well. And I once studied this period in American history. This is a long, long time ago. So, I mean, we're talking about decades away. I know you have looked at it far more thoroughly and deeply than I have done. But we have an expression in England which comes from our literature, which is that the past is another country. Things are done differently there. And I think that not only does Trump not understand what the actual American system of the 19th century was and what a very carefully thought out and planned system that also was, underpinned by a lot of very serious thinking by economic writers about which you are extremely well informed. In fact, I've taken a lot of that from you. But he also doesn't understand that the United States at that period was a very, very different country, a very different place from the United States of today, and that the American economy was in a different situation from the one that it is in today. Can I just put this to you, and I'm just putting this as a British person. In the early 20th century, there was a drift in Britain towards protection.
Now, this is where I wondered, had Mercurius watched my video, or did this just naturally occur to him as somebody who studied the British Empire, as I have? Because this is the exact point I made about three, four weeks ago.
It was a symptom of a growing sense in Britain that we were losing industrial competitiveness, that we were losing our industrial edge, which we absolutely were, by the way, and that this had to be stopped and reversed in some way. So it was actually a retreat from the big ambitions of empire that we had had before, and a free trade, which, by the way, went hand in hand with empire and imperialism in the 19th century.
See, I swear, Mercurius, watch my video, because these are all the points that I made. Great minds think alike, Alex. That's all I got to say, Alexander.
Century. In other words, it was a response, if you like, to relative decline. And it wasn't fully thought through. We had so-called imperial preference in the 1930s, which was not particularly well thought through. It did achieve some things, but it created all kinds of other problems. And that this that we're seeing now has something of that quality about it also, a sense that the position that the United States is in today, it's experiencing some of the same problems that Britain did in the early 19th century.
I just love the synergy. Maybe Alexander did watch that video. It's just too much of a coincidence, really. Or maybe it's just true. You see, this is the thing. When other people are just saying exactly the same thing as me, I just think, well, they're touching on something that's just fundamentally true. Like two different scientists making the same discovery because it's just objective reality. All right. I think that'll do for today. Just some food for thought. I mean, I don't know if it's all going to go, you know, I just know that if these tariffs actually come in that Trump has been talking about, it is, I fear that Professor Hudson is on the money in more ways than one, and that he hasn't actually really thought about the consequences of this, partly because I don't think he or any of the people around him fully understand this. All right, pick up Foundations of Economics, Foundations of Shakespeare, of course, Trivium and all the other great courses, and I'll see you all tomorrow. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.